time now to look through the window of baseball. We do with Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, for Truett & White, the professional builder's choice, and Marvin Windows and Doors. Bruce, we got a crazy band going out here behind us, but how are you today?
Hey, Bruce.
Good. There's no bands in my living room, so it's pretty sedate out here.
Very good. Hey, how do you like the Milwaukee Brewers? Five errors.
I really like them.
Come on, five errors last night.
Wow.
And they won the game. And today, they're leading in the ninth inning, and Clint Frazier walks off for the Yankees. I find this the series compelling.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, you know about Ryan Braun and some of these guys. They got the guy Aguilar hit two homers yesterday, and, you know, Broxton's making great plays in the outfield. Stephen Vogt's in there. He's all stoked to be with a contender. I mean, the longer it goes, the more believable it seems. They're nine games over 500 and having a ball.
Bruce, this George Springer, and I love catching up with you around all the things going on in baseball. And this All-Star game is just going to feature these young players in baseball. The guy hit two homers last night, 26 and 27 on the year. Brady Anderson, as a leadoff hitter, hit 26 in 1996 before the All-Star game. It's his fourth multi-homer leadoff game. Five is the record in a season. And he goes 4-for-4 or better with two homers, five RBIs. The last one to do that, Tommy Brown in 1950 for the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Jeez, I don't know that name. Tommy Brown?
Tommy Brown. And I'll tell you who he was, if I'm correct. Joe Nuxhall was the youngest player ever to pitch or ever to play in a major league game.
Right, 16.
I think this guy was second. I think Tommy Brown was like 16 or 16 in 3 days or whatever. Nuxhall was 15.
Oh, he was 15. Okay.
Yeah, but Tommy Brown was a Brooklyn Dodger in the war years, maybe 45 or something, and I think he was 16. But it's 1950, and George Springer is doing this stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's an amazing player. I mean, there's nothing accidental about that. You know, the way their lineup shapes up, you can hit Springer leadoff and take it from there with Altuve and Reddick and Correa. I mean, Gonzalez, Beltran, it just keeps going. Bregman, Gattis, I mean, it's unbelievable. But and he makes great plays in the outfield, too. I mean, this guy's a serious player. Looks like a perennial all-star. He's good in every way.
Yeah, the Astros are very entertaining to watch for all the names you just mentioned. And I'm just thinking about their skipper, A.J. Hinch, who, of course, is a former catcher. Do you think he's the kind of manager that has what it takes to make those ultimate moves in the postseason, Bruce?
Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to find out. You know, things are pretty cushy for them. I think they're leading by like 100 games or 16.5 game lead coming into today. So they can't screw up the regular season, even if they go into the tank. The Angels certainly aren't going to catch them, and I'm sure Texas and Seattle don't have much of a chance. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think what'll really put them over the top is if they were to acquire, you know, a Sonny Gray or another pitcher for their rotation, which they have a need there. And, you know, if that happens, I don't know how you screw it up. They score so many runs, and they're so exciting. You know, in the era of the home run, these guys hit plenty of homers, but they're way down near the bottom of strikeouts. They make contact. They don't settle for strikeouts. That's not acceptable.
Right.
So you never know about a manager until it really gets tight, you know, in the middle of a seven-game series.
Yeah, but young players, Bruce, and with the All-Star game coming up, baseball loves this, and boy, they're the epitome of it. Another thing I noticed this week, they did a good interview with Carlos Gomez, who plays for Texas, about comparing life when Felipe Alou had come in with the Latin Bill of Rights and what it's like today for a Latin player. Very good article. But one thing they did say, at the end of 1963, there were 18 players from the Dominican Republic that had played in Major League Baseball. At the end of 2016, there were 700.
Wow.
How about that for looking for talent in one place?
Yeah, the more the merrier for my money. You know, these guys, they're uninhibited, especially Carlos Gomez. He totally sets the tone. He's excited to play. He gets excited when he goes deep. He might flip a bat or stare at it for a while, but it's not about, you know, showing anybody up. He's just really excited to play the game and do something good and really celebrate it, you know, and that's a hallmark of the teams from Latin America and in the Dominican Republic especially. And, you know, slowly but surely it's becoming more acceptable in the game, and I'm all for that.
You know, it's funny. I was listening to Gary and Larry out here one day from the Public House, and they had Sam Dyson on, and he was adamant in his opinion that, nah, that's not the way you play. And he said, well, those guys are coming to our country to play. If we went down to their country, we'd have to follow their customs. It sounds like you're on the opposite side of that argument, Bruce.
Well, I mean, if you can go play in the Dominican Republic and be perfectly quiet, and, you know, it's not going to offend anybody that you're not flipping your bat in the air or dancing around the bases or whatever. No, I don't get that. But, you know, there's a big element of the way Dyson looks at it in the game still. You know, Madison Bumgarner, of course, is at the forefront of that. And I don't begrudge him because that's the way they came into the game, especially with Bumgarner, because you don't want him to, you know, change his way in any manner, but I think to get super offended over it is just, unless the guy's like staring at you and going, what do you think of that? You know, you chump. You know, I mean, that's one thing, but it's just to be celebrating your own glory, to get all offended by that and knock the guy down next time or hit him in the ribs, no, absolutely not.
Bruce, have you ever flipped a pen? Have you ever looked at Mark Purdy from across a press box and said, my three dot dominated your column or Bud Geraci? Have you ever flipped a pen at any of your opponents?
Yeah, I actually flipped the whole computer. Just let it fly.
You didn't do that to Frank Blackman, I'll tell you that.
No. Flip it in the air, but make sure you grab it.
Right. Not Frank, but you know Frank Blackman?
I don't.
Yeah. I worked alongside him for years.
I'll tell you stories about him. Holy cow. Yeah. That was when I first started. That was an eye-opener to work near him. Boy. All right. Andrew McCutchen is a story in baseball. And we had Ken Mock on last week, Bruce. And it's very interesting. You know, the contract is expiring. They've got two or three players coming up in their farm system. But he has turned into be an icon of Pittsburgh. They love him in Pittsburgh. And now he's hitting again. It's a good baseball story.
Well, it is. And the Pirates need a good story. And, you know, he is the Pirates. You think about the Pirates, and he's the guy that first comes to mind. You know, all the good years they had, he was right there in the middle. He's still hitting third. He's hitting like 290-something now. He's completely on the rise, and I just think it's great. I mean, in spring training, there was so much talk about it. Well, he's lost it. He doesn't have the range in the outfield anymore. You can't play him in center, which he is playing now. And his hitting, you know, his stroke is a little slower than it was, all this stuff. But he looks very much like McCutchen right now, which I think is great because, you know, the Pirates are pretty, they're not out of it, but, you know, that's going to be Milwaukee, Chicago, and the Cardinals, I'm pretty sure, in that central division. But he gives them hope.
And they love him. And they love him in Pittsburgh. They love him. They love him. I think that's the key. I didn't realize he was so iconic there until Ken Maka told us that last week when Maka was on from Pittsburgh. Bruce, we had Paul Dixon on, and he wrote the biography of Leo Durocher. And it's really a good book. And all the crazy stuff of Durocher, but maybe the craziest, and I use the example, when he went from the Giants, the Dodgers to the Giants as manager. And it'd be like waking up Sunday, go to sleep Sunday, and wake up Monday morning, and Bruce Bochy is managing the Dodgers, and he just married Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. Not Lorraine Day, but Jennifer Aniston, yeah.
I mean, that's how crazy that was at that time, and it's an unbelievable story.
Well, especially then, to go from the Dodgers to the Giants, and not as like a backup second baseman, but the friggin' manager. I mean, that's... You've got to have some moxie, man, to do that. And he had it in spades. I mean, he wrote a book that was really pretty hilarious. He just takes guys apart, just shreds people in his book. I want to see the Dixon book because I've always been fascinated by Durocher. You know, he was Sinatra. You know, he was a nightclubber and a ladies' man and you know, man about town and a real huge presence. He had the presence of like five guys.
George Raft, George Raft. Bruce, I don't know if I could explain it completely, but this was like the underworld guy who played underworld characters in the movies.
Wow.
And Leo was his roommate, and they had dice games, and they used
there
to fleece people.
Yeah, that's the kind of, you know, baseball was just a part of it for him. I mean, he lived the uptown New York City life to the fullest, and you know, getting a few scrapes here and there. He's just a classic character, one of baseball's most interesting characters, really ever.
To finish the George Raft story, so George Raft is offended that, you know, he's being, that Leo is suspended and all this. So George Raft goes up to Happy Chandler and starts making an argument on Leo's behalf that Leo should be back in baseball. And Happy Chandler looks at him and says, "Are you in baseball?" And George Raft says, "No." And then he says, "And get out of here."
Cranky Chandler, I think it was.
Yeah, that was the end of it. That was I could just see that happening. Oh, boy.
Hey, Bruce. Jenkins of the Chronicle joins Marty and Pat here at the Public House. I was asking Marty, when's the last skipper that had a ton of swashbuckling personality come through baseball? Was it Pinella, Bobby Valentine? Marty said Billy Martin. Are we forgetting any big personalities at skipper?
I'd have to look to be sure, but I mean, Lou Piniella outlasted Billy. He's the most recent one that comes to mind. I mean, he was really good. I mean, he was a classic. When it came to conflict with the umpire, he'd rip the bases out of the bag and hurl them into the outfield and come up with all kinds of crazy things to express his anger. And he'd have people in stitches because he was incensed, but it was just so funny. And he'd loosen up the club and everything else. But Billy was the master. But there were a lot of guys, in past decades that were great that way. Earl Weaver was tremendous. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you ever saw Earl Weaver's argument with Bill Haller, the umpire. Yes. That's a classic. You ought to look that up on YouTube. Earl Weaver and I think it was Bill Haller, right, Tom's brother?
Yep. He turns the hat around.
Yeah, he turns the hat around. It's just hilarious. I mean, the days of the really colorful argument are really on the wane. The managers they seem to be a lot more serious now, and they just come from a different generation. But I kind of miss those days.
Oh, yeah. Hey, the Marlins are here, and who knows if they're going to be sold, who's going to buy them, what the new owners want. But if they want to give away a few of the players, I can pick a few out here I'd like to see.
Yeah, well, two things have to happen. One, it actually does have to happen, because we got to get rid of Jeffrey Loria like yesterday. But The new guys can't come in and say, "Well, we spent all this money and we're going to have to cut back. Bear with us. It's going to be another Marlins fire sale," and that would be just monumentally depressing. I mean, that team took a huge blow when Jose Fernandez crashed his boat and died. They've got a pretty entertaining club now with Ozuna, Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich. I think the fans down there are warming to, the team. It's not, the attendance isn't great, but they've got a lot of nice pieces there, Stanton especially. I mean, you have to hold on to that guy. It would be a shame if I don't know how it's going to turn out, if the ownership. They may come in and act like big league owners that they're supposed to be, so we'll see.
FP Jr., we got information on Tommy Brown, my research team here.
Yeah, Tommy Brown in 1944 played when he was 16 years old.
All right.
Crazy.
During the war, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Somewhere that was in the deep recesses of my mind. I can't tell you why.
All the adults were overseas.
That's right. It was the fat guys against the bald guys. That's what it looked like then. Hey, Bruce, great to have you with us. I look forward to tomorrow chatting with you a little bit about the bond ceremony and a little bit about the All-Star game.
Absolutely. Sounds great, guys.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
That is Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. How about that?